This is Digital Story Podcast number 764, November 10th, 2020. Today's theme is Inside a Workshop Photo Critique. I'm Derek Story. Our first online workshop wrapped up this weekend. It was the culmination of 2 weeks of photo projects where everyone brought their images to the table to share on Friday and Saturday. I find these discussions fascinating, and I thought you might want to sit in on 3 short critiques to get a feel for what happens at these events. I think you're really going to be interested in the conversation, and I hope you enjoy the show. Regardless if you attend a physical workshop that I lead or an online one, at the core of the workshop is the ability for the participants to share their images with the other participants and be able to talk about them in a very positive and supportive way. Now, the reason why I think this is so important is because this is something that's so difficult for us to get outside of the photography world. In other words, you know, we take pictures and we show them to our family, we show them to friends, and we, generally speaking, get very positive feedbacks, but not the level of detail or not the real interest, or in all honesty, not the knowledge of photography that we're looking for. Therefore, it's hard for us to really know how good our stuff is. We know it's good, right? We know our pictures are good, but which ones are better than others? And most importantly, why? Why are they better? That's what these photography workshops give everyone who attends. And I just think it is a wonderful experience to be a part of. I just love sitting there and facilitating and looking at and commenting on and listening to what others say about photos. And I was thinking, well, if you haven't attended one of these workshops, you might be curious as to how that process runs. You know, I mean, how does it work? Well, I'm going to share that with you today. I'm going to take you inside our recent Eastern Sierra online photography workshop and let you sit in on 3 discussions that actually happened at this workshop. I recorded them and I have them ready for you. And I'm going to set each one up individually, let you listen to it, and then we'll go to the next. At the end of this, you will have a much better idea, and I hope we'll also have enjoyed the conversation and just have a moment to revel in hanging out with other photographers and talking shop, because that's really what this is about and that's what the events themselves are about. So let's get started with the first one. In this conversation, Travis, one of the photographers attending the workshop, shares one of his images from the Rule of Thirds assignment. So we have assignments that we do leading up to the event. And then at the event itself, we share 3 pictures from each assignment, and we talk about those. So the way it starts out is that Travis will set up his shot, and basically he framed a shot. It's a landscape shot with a mountain in the background, and he framed the shot using a tree and a fence and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And he'll describe that for you. But what's interesting about this, and one of the reasons why I thought you might be fascinated by it as well, is so Travis had an intent. He was trying to satisfy the Rule of Thirds assignment, and the way that assignment worked is that you could either do a Rule of Thirds shot or an anti-Rule of Thirds shot. If you went anti-Rule of Thirds, then you had to describe why you went anti, right? So you could do it either way, but it's what we used to say in basketball, you have to call bank, right? If you bank in a long shot, you have to call it first, otherwise it's just viewed as a lucky shot, okay? So you have to call your shot here, if it's Rule of Thirds or anti-Rule of Thirds. And, you know, much to my delight, and Travis seemed to really enjoy this as well, people saw things in the shot that maybe he wasn't emphasizing, but they were fascinated with. So I'm not going to do any more setup here. I'm just going to let you sit in. So this is the first one. Travis talks about Rule of Thirds in one of the photos he shares. All right. So now we're on Rule of Thirds, Travis.
The rule of thirds I was using was basically the fence rail and post. That was the rule of thirds part. There's also some of the ground slopes and stuff that you can see behind the fence posts and stuff. This mm-hmm. was actually a view of one of our local landmark peaks, one of the 14ers that is nearby.
Yeah, I mean, you got the nice framing, which is actually in another third here. Mm-hmm. And the foreground for, you know, one way to increase the depth of a shot, you know, because these shots, if you just shoot the mountain, you know this well yourself, just shoot the mountain, then it becomes very flat, very two-dimensional.
It does.
And so this is a really good way to add some depth to the shot by finding a foreground element that you want to work with. I might tone down these highlights just a hair so yeah. they don't pull my eye away from here. But I like the approach in terms of composition. Any thoughts, folks?
I like the composition a lot. I like the framing of the tree coming in from the top. I might in Lightroom try the adjustment brush and maybe try a little bit of dehaze on the mountains to try and tone down the blue of the distance. That's just something to think about. It might help you with that blue in the distance if that's something that you want to look at.
Yeah, you're seeing the effects of our local wildfires there along with a completely blue sky. That this was late morning shot again from Derek's previous discussion about, you know, not the magic hour, but right. you know, the middle of the day.
No, it's a great perspective, great composition.
One problem is I think the target was to do a rule of thirds picture. I personally think the right part of the picture is not that important. What is interesting for me is the pole with a P plus G sign where someone right. make the, so that is an eye catcher for me. So I would have cropped that the pole is more on the right and see more of the mountains and the back. So that would for me make the picture more impressive, but then it wouldn't be a true rule of thirds picture. So you had to decide to make the assignment or make the picture. So it is kind of a, maybe it would be better anti rule of thirds picture. I don't know.
That's what I was going to say. Then you just make it anti rule of thirds, right?
Yeah. I had that thought of my mind with the fence line, mm-hmm. using that as a leading line type thing, but the line that fence is making is leading into that adjacent tree, not the mountain. Mm-hmm. So much.
I guess it really depends on what the subject of the photo is. Is it the mountain, yeah. or is it the fence? Because as I'm looking at it, I'm almost thinking the fence is more the interesting subject part. Yeah. And I'm kind of, when you saw my hands up there, I was just kind of cropping and looking at it. And I don't know. I kind of like the P plus D on the fence and the fence rails, and then you've got the background framing it.
Yeah,
so anyway, I think you can get multiple different images out of one photograph.
That's I think, right. Good point. Yes.
I think for me, I think I would have cropped it almost square format or 8x10, you know, something like that to knock off that right side a little bit. But, and Derek, you know, we'll get to this when I did mine. I think this is more of a, you know, all these techniques have combinations of different, you know, rules of thirds, et cetera, but this more to me is what they call, like, I think natural framing. Mm-hmm. Where you use the environment to frame the picture. And so I think this is more of an example of the compositional technique called natural framing. And it's actually perfect for it. And I think, you know, cropping a little bit off the right and putting a little bit of a vignette, especially down in that lower corner a little bit or upper right, I think would really keep drawing your eye back. So, but otherwise, I think I love the framing aspect. And I also like the rails and everything, but I want to keep drawing my eye back. So the framing does that. I think a little bit of vignette and cropping off the right would just make this really a great picture, you know?
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, that's a technique I like to use is that framing on that shot.
Yeah, but so this is really more of a framing picture versus a third. I would say more of a framing technique than a third. That's what I would say, but they all have aspects of everything in them.
The other thing about it is the angle of the fence and the angle of the two mountain ranges. You have a natural Z. You have a floating mm-hmm. from right to left to right and back to left. And I think if the rail had been level, it would have messed up the photograph.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this
probably
would have been. This was taken from a trail that had some slope to it, so that's why that rail.
No, I mean, it's great. It's
following the grade of the trail.
Okay, so that's pretty fun stuff, don't you think? It's really good. So I have another one for you. So in this discussion, Richard, another one of our photographer participants, he also has a rule of thirds shot, I believe. But he has a bit of surprise in his shot. So he sort of starts out just describing the shot and how he and his wife came upon it and all that kind of stuff. And we're just kind of rolling along with it. And then about a minute or so into it, he sort of drops this bomb on us that takes the discussion in a whole different direction. So tune in, and here's Richard talking about his image.
Oh, gosh. This is the one I had posted on the site.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, on occasion, my wife and I get out and we just drive around, you know, get out into the rural parts.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw these cows and that windmill there. And we stood there for 20 minutes just watching the cows. Finally, that one cow looked at us and I took the picture. And I have a confession to make on this picture. That sky isn't real. It was an overcast day.
That'd be a whole different shot because that's a lot of sky.
Yes. Yes. The overcast, it was nothing.
So what'd you use?
Is it Luminar or Photoshop?
Luminar.
It's good.
It does. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, this windmill with all the detail and everything, I don't see any halos at all.
Mm-mm.
That's the interesting thing with Luminar you have to be careful with, because I have a little gallery in my house. I was looking at some pictures, and there were two pictures with the same sky in it.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm advocating for, we all build our own sky libraries, you know, to protect us from that. But I didn't know. Honestly, I didn't know on this shot.
Is there a wind farm back there?
Yes, and I did not do a good job of taking those out. As you can see, okay. There's half of them all in there.
Yeah, the poles are there.
Since the sky was gray, the windmills just molded right into this. You couldn't see them because they were white. You know, once I sent these to Derek, I was looking at that and I go, you know, I should have spent a little more time on those windmills.
Oh, that's so funny.
But it's been corrected since.
Attack, okay. Where they melted the top of our wind farms, you know.
Yes.
Oh, all right. That's good. That's a hoot. Okay, that's fun, right? Isn't that fun? And I thought it was so timely because, you know, right now with Adobe announcing sky replacement in Photoshop and Luminar really pushing sky replacement as one of their key features, sky replacement just, excuse the pun, seems to be in the air right now. So I thought it was really cool that, you know, Richard had that in his shot. And then, of course, a little twist on how it turned out was kind of fun. And I just enjoyed the whole thing. And, you know, one of the things that I want to point out that's just consistent through all these discussions that we have and through all the critiques is that, you know, the sense of camaraderie and the fun that people are having with it and, you know, the spirit of, oh, my gosh, yes, I did do that, didn't I? And, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, the tone of it is just makes it so productive. And that's one of the things that I really like about these. I thought that conversation embodied that spirit that I like so much in our events. Okay, I have one more for you, though, however. And this is Peter. And Peter is from Germany. And, you know, his shots were very excellent, just like everyone else's were. But then, after he rolled through some, then he was getting a lot of pats on the back for his work. Then he decides to share this very unusual shot with him. And I need to set up a little bit so he can really appreciate the comments. He was walking along and he finds this alongside the trail, this little miniature scene. I mean, it was like a miniature picnic that someone had handcrafted and left there alongside the trail. And you know, there was a little bench and a table and food and all sorts of creatures around it. And it was to scale, and it was this beautiful thing, and the whole thing was very small. I mean, just, I don't know, maybe 8 or 12 inches in length, and maybe half as much as wide. So he decided to, you know, take a close-up shot of it, and, you know, he did the best he could with the angle and everything, but then he didn't really know what he had or if what he had was of interest. In each presentation, photographers are allowed to share 3 shots that are of their own choosing. And this is one of them that he decided to share to get feedback on. And I just love this conversation.
On the next one, I need your help. This was very, very difficult to shoot. I spotted this by accident. I think it was 2 weeks ago. I was out in the woods and was prepared to shoot some Indian summer colors, and suddenly I spotted something on the walkway, on the side of the walkway, and it was a steep slope, so it was quite difficult to come close with the camera, and then I saw this. And I think according to the acorns which lying around, you can imagine how big these pieces are. They are tiny. They are tiny. I don't know who put it there and why someone put it there, but I thought I shall shoot a close-up. So maybe it's not the best one from a photographic technical standpoint, but I think it's a somewhat interesting theme.
You have little people in Germany.
Yeah, very little people, but they are not at home currently.
If this were Ireland, I'd say it was leprechauns.
It's a fun photo. It really is. You know, when you figure out the acorns, you go, hey, wait a minute here.
Then you see that cat on the rock just peeking mm-hmm. around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The only thing I'd suggest, I actually kind of like this. There's so much in here. You can see something.
Yeah,
new. The only thing I'd suggest is that red of that water bottle over on the right-hand side, that kind of, I'd almost see what I could do about getting rid of that.
I would get rid of it too.
That makes three.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure whether I should keep it or not, because it's fun.
I like it too. It's so cool. I would play a little with some color toning to see, like the kinds of moods you could get. You could make it a little darker, sort of a dark mood, or lighten it up. You know, you could really play with this with some color toning and get all kinds of different moods with it. It's very cool looking. There's so much here. It's just fun to, look at, you know?
It's really fun to look at. I agree. I totally agree.
Do you
realize the work that went into that? I mean, there's a tiny little loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Tiny little pear.
Yeah.
A pretzel.
I have a shot where I have it closer, the table, but then I lose all these other things which are around. Mm-hmm. And as Brenda said, it's a picture where I can look around and you see new things. Yeah. So I thought, keep all the stuff inside. On the left, I don't know what is a fence or kind of a bridge or what. I don't know. There are pieces. So it's, I think it's partially destroyed on the left a little bit, but
I believe the water bottle benches. Because it makes the scene even more baffling.
I just think the benches are spectacular. Somebody not only made that table, but they also put together 2 little benches.
There's
Mr. Potato Head on top of the rock, the mustache thing.
Yeah.
I thought what could have been nice, but I think you need to go in there with a kind of small camera, which you can put inside of this scenario and get a different angle of the whole thing. Because with my camera, I wasn't able to come that low to shoot from a different perspective. Yeah. Almost like a 360 camera where you can put inside there and then you would have a kind of Gulliver perspective of the whole thing.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. You put a trail cam out there to see who comes and uses and sits down and has dinner.
Right.
Yeah. I can go there next week, but I hope maybe it's not, it's all eaten up then.
Yeah.
There you go. And it's a fascinating shot. It's a fascinating shot indeed. So I hope that gives you a feel for how the photo critiques go within our workshops. They are far and away, you know, the highlight of the event. You know, everything just sort of builds up to this day or days, depending on, you know, how we have the workshop designed, of where we get to share these images and, you know, enjoy them and comment on them. And what happens with the Derek Story online site, which is now we run all of our workshops around the site, and it is the event site for both our online workshops right now, but it will also be the site to manage our physical workshops when we get to have them again, when COVID settles down enough to where we can start having physical workshops. We're going to use Derek Story online. And one of the things that's happening with the Eastern Sierra online right now is that people, you know, they note the comments and they note the discussion about their favorite shots in particular. And then they go back and they rework the shots a bit, you know, based on the conversation. And then they post the reworked shots on our Derek Story online site, our workshop site, where we get to see as participants, you know, the next level of that shot. We get to see what they did to it. We get to see what comments resonated with them and which ones didn't. And it is so much fun to see these shots originally and then see them again on Derek Story online afterwards, and then we get to comment on them all over again. So I just love this process. It is photography at its best, in my opinion. So anyway, enough with that for right now. You can tell I'm very excited about it. I'm coming off 2 days of sharing this with our workshop participants, so I'm both elated and punchy all at the same time. Okay. Thank you to all of our workshop participants for giving so much, not only your artistry and your hard work, but also, you know, your comments and sharing your observations with the other photographers. It just meant so much to me, and I know it meant so much to the other participants as well. Well, that segment is a perfect segue into this segment right here, which is announcing the Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop. I thought this would be the perfect thing to do for this time of year, for those of us who are in North America. But as you can tell, you know, the online workshops are open to everyone all across the world. We had one gentleman in Japan, we had one gentleman in Germany, we had people all over the US. So really, time knows no boundaries on these sort of things. Nonetheless, I still think this is a good time to do a black and white workshop. So let me tell you a little bit about this online event. It's going to be an evolution of what we just did with the Eastern Sierra event. The goal of this is to explore the creation of stunning monochrome and duotone images. That's what we're all about here. Now, the way that we're going to do it is we're going to have three assignments and three tutorials, and those are going to be leading up to the workshop itself. So they are going to begin on Wednesday, December 16th, with the culmination of the workshop on Saturday, January 9th. So what we'll do is every Wednesday, there'll be a new assignment, there'll be a new tutorial, and photographers, participants will be, you know, spending this time preparing their work and trying new things, because trying new things is so important on this, you know, learning new techniques, you know, exploring areas that you haven't explored before. And then on Saturday, January 9th, we'll spend the whole day together doing presentations like you just heard in the previous segment, where people get to share their work and we get to talk about it. So the workshop participants, they'll have access to our new virtual workroom, Derek Story Online, which is the platform that we used to run the Eastern Sierra workshop. And this platform, it features tutorials, photo sharing, assignments, chats, and event scheduling. So even though the actual presentation doesn't happen until January 9th, we are meeting each other, getting to know each other, sharing work with each other leading up to that. That all starts on December 16th. And it's scheduled so that you can work on this stuff whenever you want, leading up to January 9th. Now, I thought for a lot of folks having time with family who might have a little bit of time off from work, that this is a great time to explore interior black and white photography. You might have some time to do a little urban work, which we're going to talk about. You might have some time to play with some infrared photography, which we're going to cover. It's just going to be great. So if you have a family gathering, let's say around late December, you can have your camera set to black and white mode using one of the techniques that we talk about leading up to it, and actually do some work then. Work on your interior stuff. You can do some black and white still lifes leading up to it. You know, we're going to have specific assignments that allow you to explore all these different techniques. So the bullet points on this workshop are this: how to see and capture great black and white with your digital camera. So actually shooting black and white with your digital camera. Post-processing techniques to elevate your work to the highest level. Tips and techniques for printing your images for archival endurance that will last generations. And that's one of the nice things about black and white, is that if you do the prints right, they can last a long, long time, which is really cool. We'll also take a look at black and white film photography with the simplest way to process at home without a darkroom. And it is super simple and super effective. And then we'll also be looking at specialized software that helps you explore new looks for your black and white photography. So you can see why I'm so excited about this course. Now, because of the nature, the sharing nature, and you know all the stuff that we'll be doing together, this event is limited to 10 participants. So only 10 can participate in this. And those 10 participants will enjoy the all-day presentations on January 9th. They'll be a part of it with feedback on their images. There'll be 3 photo assignments with tutorials to help them prepare for each. We'll have online chats and checkups all along the way, and then unlimited access to Derek's Story Online before, during, and after the event. Reservations will be on a first-come, first-served basis. There's a link to the reservation page here in the show notes, and then the workshop will also be listed at thenimblephotographer.com, and just click on workshops there so you can get to it either way. Tuition for all of this is only $150 for the entire course. $150 for the entire course that begins on December 16th and ends on January 9th. And Patreon members will get a discount. So if you're a Patreon member, look for that posting on our Inner Circle site. Again, you can sign up now at thenimblephotographer.com. I think you're going to like this. If you like black and white photography, I think you're going to love this event. The perfect thing to do this time of year to improve your skills when most of us don't have access to lovely landscapes and travel. Sony announces it's getting into the drone game with its new AirPeak brand. You know, I thought this was just a matter of time. I really did. I just want to give you a heads up on this. You can read the entire article on DP Review. I have the link in the show notes. Watch out, DJI. Sony Corporation announced today that it's getting into the drone market under the brand name AirPeak. In a short press release, accompanied by a teaser video, Sony says the AirPeak brand will reflect its aspiration to contribute to the further evolvement and creation of the unprecedented value through its imaging and sensing technology. Oh my gosh. The big boys are going to the air, right? While Sony does hint at industrial purposes for its drones, the company specifically says the AirPeak brand will support the creativity of video creators to the fullest extent possible. Sony says the project will launch in the spring of 2021. In the meantime, it will share information along the way and work on partnerships to test their products and get feedback from drone users. You can keep up with the latest updates on Sony's new AirPeak website. So, you know, I had just wondered how long is DJI going to get to rule this space without being challenged by a heavy hitter. And actually, their run, their unopposed run, went longer than I thought. And Sony is probably the perfect brand to go into that space. I'm really looking forward to see what they do. DJI is very good at what they do, so there's going to be a lot of catching up to do. But as we saw in the full-frame camera space, Sony has the ability to catch up quickly if they put their minds to it. So more to come on this. Just a little virtual camera club news. First of all, a big thanks to our Inner Circle members, many of which who attended our Eastern Sierra Online Photography Workshop. Thank you so much for your participation and for getting us off to a great start with our online workshop season. And as a thanks to our Inner Circle members, all of them, if you're interested in joining the Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop, there will be a discount for you. I try to have as many perks as possible for our Patreon members because I love them so much and I want to keep them happy. So a big thanks to everyone who supports us. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go see what we're up to, and hopefully you will join this great group of artists who help support our community. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. I'm going to be talking about Red River Paper in the Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop because they have some great stocks for black and white printing. Stuff that you would swear came out of a photochemical darkroom from the 1980s. Seriously. So Red River Paper, they are versatile, they are smart, they have cool stuff, they are helpful, they are friendly. I know it sounds a little bit like a Boy Scout there, but I don't mean it that way. They're just really great people to work with. Go see them by clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, the Red River Paper tile. See what they're up to. Get some prints made for the holidays. Get some fine art cards made for the holidays. People will love it. I have to tell you this little anecdote. I got a call from my mom today. I talk to my mom every week. In addition to being my mom, she's a delightful person. Some of you may remember I interviewed her back a couple years ago. At any rate, last time I was down to see her, I took a picture. I had a picture taken. My brother-in-law actually snapped the camera after I set it up of my sister and myself and my mom sitting on her back patio because it's COVID times. And so we had to, you know, do that. We had to be outside. And my mom just loves that picture. She loves that picture because she says we all look good, which is so funny. So she calls me up today and she says, you know what? I'm doing my holiday cards for the season. And I would love to share that picture with people I'm sending cards to. Can you make me 25 prints and send them to me? And I said, Mom, that is a wonderful idea. That is such a great idea. Even my mom has caught on to the beauty of printing. And I shouldn't say even my mom. Especially my mom has caught on to the joy of printing. So I'm going to do that for her this week. I'm going to print them out on some Red River paper, probably some luster stock. I think it would look really nice on some luster. Just make a batch of 4x6s and get them off to her. And I love that sort of sharing. I love that sort of thinking. This is the time of year for that kind of stuff. So if you want to capture some memories and share them with other people, go over to the Red River Paper site, get some stock, make some beautiful things, and then make other people happy. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast, our longest running sponsor. And they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I had so much fun at the workshop. I hope you got a little taste of it and it got you excited as well. Come back and join me next week. I'm working on some great things. Until then, stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.